I'm very conscious that as we look at a tiny section of the book of Job, if we were to take it on its own, it would be helpful, but it's not nearly as helpful as the book as a whole. And this is one of those books that it's not an easy read. You have to take your time over it. In a real sense, if this doesn't sound too cliched, you have to go on the journey. Because what the book of Job does is it gives us wisdom by taking us into the feelings of despair when everything really looks totally black. And when you're in that place, as I have been, and no doubt many of you have, this is the help we need. And so I just mention it to you because one day you may need this book. So I would suggest go on the journey while the sun's shining, because it'll help you when it seems that the sun's gone out. You'll know you're not alone. Someone has been here before and has come out the other side. That's why Job is so very, very helpful. Now, let me just try and help us with a tiny little bit to deal with this subject that have been given very wisely by the church leaders. There's always hope. But what does hope look like when everything seems hopeless? And then secondly, why should we have hope? Right, obviously the animations aren't working, so this is a wee bit of a problem for me, but it won't be for you. It just means you don't get any surprises. There are no reveals that are going to come here, which is a bit of a shame, but never mind. What this is basically saying is that hope is not the same thing as optimism. And that's important, because some of us are natural optimists. You know, we're the tiggers of life. And then there are others who are the natural pessimists, you know, the Eeyores and the puddle glums. And then, of course, there are the realists. Now, as far as I'm aware, most people who are pessimists think that they are actually being realists. Whereas I'm one of these natural optimists, and I'm very glad that I have a wife who thinks quite differently, who brings me down to earth with reality. And I'm very glad that when I shared in church leadership, I've had people who look for the problems. I look for the solutions. I look for the way through. I'm always one of these people who can see, yeah, this can happen. But, you know, reality means that we need people who can see the bits that we can't see for ourselves. So what we're not talking about is a mindset here of optimists or pessimists. We're talking about the realities, and is there hope, whatever our mindset is? You know, something real. You know, it's not just a matter of Kid Malieri, oh yeah, things will be better. Is there a real, genuine hope, especially when we think things are bad? So whether you're a glass-half-empty person, the pessimist, or a glass-half-full person, the optimist, it applies to us all. Is there hope? Hoping against hope, when hoping seems hopeless. The bit that's obscured there is verses 1 to 6. Listen to this. This is, if you've got a Bible, you'll find it really helpful to have the Bible open at Job chapter 14. We will try and get at least the message of this chapter. And this is what Job is saying. Mortals, born of woman, are a few days and full of trouble. You see what I mean? This is spiritual realism. We've only got a wee while, and while we're here, it's not actually a bag of laughs all the time. It's full of trouble. They spring up like flowers and wither away. Like fleeting shadows, they do not endure. Do you fix your eye on them? Will you bring them before you for judgment? Who can bring what is pure from what is impure? No one. A person's days are determined You, God, have decreed the number of his months and have set limits he cannot exceed. So look away from him and let him alone till he has put in his time like a hired laborer. He was saying life's tough. And you determine how long we've got, and you've numbered our days. How long only news is. Now, you can't blame Job for sounding a bit hopeless, can you? When you see what he'd been through, he'd been a very rich man, and in a day, he lost all of his riches. On the same day, his big family, for whom he had prayed constantly, were all killed. And then, shortly afterwards, his health went completely. You see, it doesn't really matter whether Job was a glass half empty man or a glass half full man. The graphic is he was a glass shattered man. That was it. His whole life had crashed completely and was in ruins at his feet. And everyone seemed against him. His wife, even. Are you going to hang on to your integrity in the face of this job? Curse God and die, she says to him. His friends, and they were friends, and I'm sure his wife loved him too, by the way. But, you know, it gets to that point, doesn't it? You know, why are you going on like this? His friends come to support him, but as you read through, and they're trying to make sense of this situation, it just makes it worse. But above all, Job has this profound sense that God is against him. Now, we know what he doesn't know, because we've got the opening two chapters that he doesn't know about, that God was letting Satan do his damnedest, and I use my words intentionally, to destroy Job, and God was proving that it wasn't just because everything went well for Job that he had faith. We know that. Job didn't know that. Neither did his friends or his wife or anything else. Because if they had done, it wouldn't have been a proper test. But it was. And in this man's loss of everything, God was showing us something very, very important. No matter how bleak it is, yes, there is. Now, what Job says, and he gives us this very helpfully, is he says, the problem is, humans die and that's it. At least as far as life on earth is concerned, that is it. So there is more hope for a tree than for humans. You see the way he puts it? Look at verse 7. At least there's hope for a tree. If it's cut down, it will sprout again, and its new shoots will not fail. Its roots may grow old in the ground and its stump die in the soil, yet at the scent of water it will bud and put forth shoots like a plant. But a man dies and is laid low. He breathes his last and he is no more. As the water of a lake dries up or a river bed becomes parched and dry, so he lies down and does not rise. Till the heavens are no more, people will not awake or be roused from their sleep. Do you see what Job is saying? He's saying, cut down a tree, and amazingly, there will be sprouts. You go into the forest, see what's there. It happens. You know, I'm not much of a gardener. In fact, I'm a pretty useless gardener. But when I've trashed plants in my garden, amazingly, still sprouts grow out of them. Is it? But when someone dies, they're buried, and that's it. Or they're burned, or whatever else. But that's it. So, do you see the realism of Job? There's more hope for a tree than for a human being, because when we die, that's it, and we don't rise again. That's what he's saying. That's his experience. That's the common experience of humanity, isn't it? You die and you're buried and, you know, you don't see your family anymore. But a tree, there's more hope for a tree. It'll sprout. Furthermore, Job recognizes that God is in control of everything, and therefore, as far as he can see, it is God who has destroyed his hope. This is verses 18 to 22. But as a mountain erodes and crumbles, and as a rock is moved from its place, as water wears away stones and torrents wash away the soil, so you destroy a person's hope. You overpower them once and for all, and they're gone. You change their countenance and send them away. If their children are honored after they've died, they do not know it. If their children are brought low, they don't see it. They feel but the pain of their own bodies and mourn only for themselves. God had destroyed Job's hope. Hoping against hope. That's where Job was. How could he have hope when all hope had gone? How could he hope against hope? If only, he says, and this is where we come to our little section, if only you would let me die, verse 13. And I've been with people, because I've been a pastoral minister, I've been with a number of people who are just longing to die for one reason or another. And Job's at that place. If only you'd just let me die. But he's also saying, if only one day you'd remember me. You see that in verses 13 and 14. 13, if only you would hide me in the grave and conceal me till your anger had passed. If only you would set me a time and then remember me. And then he says this, if someone dies, will they live again? All the days of my hard service, I wait for my renewal, or if you've got an NIV, it'll say down in the margin, or release to come. What is it that Job is hoping for? Is he hoping simply to be released from this life and get out of this agony? Or is there perhaps the hint of something more, which is what the main text of the NIV is picking up? There's something there. And as you read on, you will call and I will answer you. You will long for the creature your hands have made. Surely you will count my steps but not keep track of my sin. My offenses will be sealed up in a bag. You will cover over my sin, but as a mountain. You see, he's just got this sense, oh, surely, surely, surely God is going to one day put things right. Surely, even though I seem to have nothing of any hope, my only hope is death. But even then, might God just remember me? Might he? You see, there is within Job's journey, which seems so black, every so often just a flicker of hope. A question. Might there be something? Earlier on in chapter 13, he says this, though he slay me, speaking of God, Yet will I hope in him. I will surely defend my ways to his face. You see, Job is all the way through protesting his basic innocence. He doesn't deserve these catastrophes that have come, whereas his friends are saying, you know, if life's this bad, you must have done something mega bad, Job. And he's saying, well, like any of us, he wasn't perfect and he knew that, but he'd prayed for his children that they might be preserved and they might not sin. I'm sure he had prayed and known that his sins were forgiven like we would. I'm convinced of that. Job doesn't present as someone who is sinlessly perfect. But he knew he wasn't basically all that bad. He didn't deserve this because he had done dreadful things. Surely God has got some ounce of justice in him. And he senses, I've got to have a chance at least for my day in court to talk to God. Do you see what he's saying? Do you get the feeling, the passion? He's in real turmoil in his despair. So the question I have is, why should we have hope? Well, firstly, because hope is not cheap and easy. You know, there are some people who'll just say, ah, well, never mind. All things work together for good. It's fine. Don't worry. That's just so superficial and not what you want to hear when you're going through it, is it? That's not good. Hope, true Christian hope, is going to face the toughest tests. And Job is an example of this for us. If you go to Romans chapter 8, which is well worth reading, Romans chapter 8 from verse 28 onwards, talks about this. We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And what's that? For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son. Do you see what our destiny is if we are those who are trusting in Jesus? It's to become like Jesus, conformed to the image of his Son. And the way that God does that is that he doesn't just put us in cotton wool and say, ah, there, I'll keep you nice and safe so you get to glory. He lets us face the winds and the waves, the real trials of life, because that's what rubs off all the rough edges. I was down at Selsey yesterday and we were watching the sea over some big boulders that had been turned sort of round, and they were shiny as the water was over them. And you could just see this is the effects of years and years of the waves on these stones making them shine. A lovely picture. And that's what God is doing so that we, those whom he foreknew, loved from before time, his predestiny, set a destiny that we should be conformed to the image of his Son, so that we can become like Jesus. Isn't that great? And the way that he does it is that he lets us face trouble. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it's written, for your sake we face death all day long. We are considered as sheep to be slaughtered. Now, if you've got some crazy idea that once you become a Christian, life's just easy from here on in and you go to heaven, you've got another thing coming. Jesus was perfectly clear. If you want to be my disciple, what you do is you pick up your cross and follow me. In other words, this is going to be tough because this is how God works in us. And nothing, we will discover in practice that nothing will separate us from the love of God. It may all try, but neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor demons, nor the present, nor the future, nor any powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation, even though they may all try, none of them will separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. Because God loves us bigger than that. Do you see? And Job goes through more than any of us is ever likely to face. As an example, he's there to see, well, even though it's bad, it's not that bad. And read to the end of the book. He gets through it. He gets through it. Do you see? That's why it's there to help us. Our hope will face the toughest tests, but we will prove that God's love is bigger than that. We live on the other side of the cross, you see. from Job. And we read from Romans chapter 8, what then shall we say in response to these things? If God is for us, if God is for us, and of course this is what Job at this point in the story didn't realize. He thought God was against him. He's going to get there, but we know what was happening. We know how the story ends to help us to see if God is for us, who can be against us? And this is why we know, not just because of Job, but because of Jesus. Because God did not spare his only son, but gave him up for us all. So if he has done that, you think about it. If you're a parent, would you give up your child for others? I know I wouldn't. I can just about, and I'm a bit of a coward, but I can just about see myself being willing to die. But I have to protect my kids and my grandchildren. I couldn't do that. But what God did was that he gave his one and only son. What more precious gift could a father give? And having given us that, how will he not with him freely give us all things? Having given the most priceless gift, he's going to throw the wrapping paper in as well, isn't he? That's what he's saying. Who is the one? It's God. Who will bring any charge against those whom God has chosen? It's God who declares us to be in the right. Who is the one who condemns us? Well, no one. The only person who could condemn us is Jesus. And Christ Jesus has died. More than that, he was raised to life. Now that is something Job had not experienced. That is something that we know. Unlikely though it was, because these two disciples on the road to Emmaus, they weren't expecting this at all. But we know that Jesus died and was raised and was seen and touched and all the rest of it. And we know that he is living still today. He's in the place of authority at the right hand of God, and he is praying for us. He's interceding for us. He, the one who died for us, lives and is praying. He's the captain of our salvation. He's the one who's already over the line. This is Hebrews type thinking. So he's going to get the whole team across. He's there in heaven praying for us. Romans chapter 8. But long before, even before Jesus came, Job could declare these things. Even now, my witness is in heaven. My advocate is on high. My intercessor, the person who's pleading for me, is my friend. As my eyes pour out tears to God on behalf of a man, he pleads with God as one pleads for a friend. And then, because this is still to come, by the way, in Job, that's Job chapter 16. You'll not be able to see it, but it is Job chapter 16. But when you get to chapter 19, he says, I know that my Redeemer liveth. And isn't that didn't Handel get that right? I know that my Redeemer liveth. Yeah, I know it. Yeah, I know it. That's what he's saying. And that in the end, he will stand on the earth. And after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh, I will see God. I myself will see him with my own eyes. I and not another. How my heart yearns within me. Why should we have hope? Well, hope is not cheap and easy. Follow the journey with Job. Hope will face the toughest tests. God in his goodness warns us it's going to be tough. But our hope rests on God. And I know that my Redeemer is Jesus. This is what it's all about. Get this idea, the idea of a Redeemer, redemption. A bit like when, you know, we were watching actually on holiday up in Aberdeen there, and we were in this shop with all these things for sale, and they were doing a sale even, and Singh said, "What sort of shop is this?" And I said, "It's a pawnbroker's. They still exist." And the whole idea of a pawnbroker's is you give something in, you get the money, and then you can go and pay the money back and a bit more, and you get your ring back or whatever it is. And if people don't redeem it, then they'll just sell it and get their money that way. That's the idea of redeeming. In the New Testament days, this was the language of the slave market. And you could buy a slave, and they could be yours, but you'd actually also buy a slave and set them free. You redeem them. You pay the price to set them free. That's the idea of the Redeemer, redemption. I know that my Redeemer lives. But this idea of a Redeemer has got tremendous Old Testament roots, and you've got to see the whole story, if you like. Because if you read a book like Ruth, which is a much easier read than Job, by the way, and it's only four chapters, and it's beautiful, and if you haven't read it recently, please do, because it gives you the idea of the Redeemer who is the nearest relative. You know, if you were in trouble and you'd had to sell your land and all the rest of it, the person who had the first right to help you out, to restore your land, was the next of kin. And the whole story of Ruth shows how Boaz acts as the kinsman redeemer to restore the property to Ruth, the widow of a man who had died. And she, for a complete outsider, is brought in and comes into the ancestry of David and the ancestry of Jesus, and how this complete outsider is brought in. And it's through redemption. The nearest relative pays the price so that all of this can be released back to the rightful person. Do you see the idea? That's the idea of the kinsman redeemer. But also, in these days, they didn't have police forces. So, if somebody wronged you, and perhaps particularly if they killed you, and therefore you couldn't do anything about it yourself, the person who had the responsibility to seek justice for you was the nearest relative, nearest male relative in those days, and that's understandable. So the person who could be the kinsman redeemer was the same person who was the avenger of blood. And it's the one word, this one word, that is referred to him. Now, what Job is saying, I know that my Redeemer lives, but he didn't know who his Redeemer was. What we know is that God sent his Son in the likeness of sinful flesh to be a human being just like us. Only one difference, he was without sin. And in his body of flesh, weak human flesh like yours and mine, he paid the price to set us free. He took sin's penalty so that we could be released from sin's power, even the fear of death. He paid the price to set us free, but our Redeemer lives. And he is the one who will come to our rescue, come to our aid. He's the one who will vindicate us. He's the avenger of blood. He's the one who will judge what is evil and whatever may be thrown at us. And we accept it in weakness, and we don't need to rise to our own defense. And Christians will not retaliate and kill like those who call themselves martyrs by killing others. We will not. Because we face death all day long. That's the deal we signed up to when we were baptized. We face this. But we know that one lives in heaven who is not only praying for us, but he will come and put things right for us because he is our kinsman redeemer. Do you see? Job knew that his redeemer lives. We know that our redeemer is Jesus. So, there is always hope because our eternal hope is in God because of Jesus. Father, help us to remember this when we face life's darkest hour. Amen.